Blog Talk Radio. God, what a great song that is. Welcome to Red Velvet Media Blog Talk Radio, and this is Holly. And today I happen to have a wonderful guest. He wanted me to play that song, and we're going to get a little bit of insight on that. I have Baron Woolman, who is a very accomplished rock and roll photographer extraordinaire. He was the first photographer on staff at Rolling Stone, and his career goes from there with legendary photos that are just wonderful. And I have him with me today, and we're going to talk about his new book, Every Picture Tells a Story, that's going to be released soon. And we're going to talk about, if you want to call in, you can call in 347-677-1036. If you have questions for myself or my co-host, Spencer Drait, I want to thank Spencer for bringing Baron on the show. And the show will be available as a podcast after the show. I just want to bring up that we do shows normally on Wednesdays and Fridays now. Wednesdays are Indie Wednesdays. And we have quite a few really great things planned that are coming up. So with that, I'm going to bring them on. And I just want to say real quick here, we have a show coming up on the 29th, this coming Wednesday. It's Angel Show, which is our fifth in our series. And it's, you know, a pretty exciting show that we're going to have. So and then after that, on the following Friday, we have Frank Stefanko. But I'm just so happy to have Baron on the phone with us, and also Spencer. And with that, let me bring them on. And if you want to listen live, guys, you can listen. I'm going to open up the chat room right now. And if you have any questions, call in or chat away. Here we go. Welcome, welcome.
Hello, Holly.
Spencer.
Hello, Holly.
Yeah, hey, guys. That was such a great song.
Yeah.
You know, Baron, that song, you know, they played that song for that that series that was on TV also. Believe it or not, it was part of a show, and I just really love that song. What made you choose that song?
Well, the only time I really shot Dylan was when he first introduced this album called Slow Train Coming, and this this song is from that album. And what was happening at that time is he was having a real kind of crisis of faith, you know, trying to figure out where he was going to go faith-wise, what was going on. I'm telling you, if you listen to all the lyrics in that album, you see not only what a man is going through, what a human is going through at a certain stage in his life, but what we're all going through now as we see this chaotic world all around us. And so one of the things that struck me about that song is that we've got politicians who aren't paying attention to these words, you know, who are serving themselves rather than serving the rest of the world, you know. And so I thought, let's mention it.
Yeah, no, that's such a strong song, and I mean, it just like really hits home, and it's very bluesy, and a really good song to really listen to. And besides just the music, I mean, you were the first photographer on staff at Rolling Stone, and then your career went on from there. So maybe you want to fill us in on how you got started in Rolling Stone and where you went, and how you are so great with what you're doing now.
Well, you know, I guess I was at the right place at the right time. I was a photojournalist living in the Haight-Ashbury, taking a bunch of pictures during the summer of the summer of love and before and after the summer of love. And one of my clients was Mills College. You probably know that over in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
They have a really great music department, and so they told me they were going to have a conference on rock and roll in April of 1967. And it was the first time that a university or any kind of institution was taking rock and roll seriously, or it seemed to be they seemed to be the first ones that did it. And so I called the magazines that I usually work for, Look and Life and all of those back in the day, and said, we ought to cover this. And the guy I usually work with said, well, I can't do it. It's a great idea, but why don't you call this guy? He's a student over at Cal Berkeley, 21 years old. He loves music, and he writes for the Daily Cal. He probably would want to cover it with you. Long story short, that guy turned out to be Jan Wenner, and he did cover it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then while we were there, he said, I got this idea for a magazine, and he said, what do you think? I said, sounds like a great idea. He said, do you want to shoot the pictures? I said, sure. He said, you got $10,000 to invest? I said, no, I don't, unfortunately, but I'll shoot for free if you give me stock in the company. And, of course, there was no stock in the company, so it was easy.
Right.
There was no company, so it was easy for him to say yes, and that's how we started.
And Rolling Stone was born. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really great story. And, I mean, I've seen some of these photographs that you have done. I mean, the classic Johnny Cash picture and just some of the images that you've done on rock and roll, I mean, and the culture, innocent and not so innocent as it says, beginning in San Francisco and all that. I mean, you just did some really great stuff. And I want to ask you, and then I know Spencer probably has a few questions for you, but what was your driving force? How did you get started in photography, and what caused you to pick up a camera and decide that this is really what you really resonated with and wanted to do?
Well, I started it as a hobby in high school. My cousin had a a camera.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. He had this really great camera.
It's that New York smog. Okay.
It's the New York smog.
I'm waiting for the taxis in the background. Usually when Spencer's on the phone, I hear sirens or something
right.
like that. But
yeah.
Just waiting.
Or the garage.
Okay,
or the
so carry on.
Truck.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Carry on. I want to hear this.
Anyhow.
Oh, God.
He had a camera, and I saw that camera really allowed him to get into places where people weren't allowed, you know, cross police lines and things like that. So I picked up a camera.
Uh-huh.
The moment I picked it up, I loved it. I saw I could make sense out of the chaos of the world around me. That's
right.
The short end. That's the short
chaos.
Yeah. What?
That's all you saw, chaos. You didn't see any of the beauty that was going on.
No.
Yeah, that's a good word.
And I saw the beauty through the camera. That's what I was saying. That I was
see, that's
able to
amazing.
Make sense out of the chaos, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I've seen some of these images, and out of the chaos, you've captured some mind-boggling images that are just, you know, classic.
Thank you so much.
And you know what's interesting, Holly, is that,
uh-huh.
and you know this, he's strong. Baron, you're very strong in color and black and white, which photographers vary in that. But I find you're very strong on both sides of it, which is really amazing and beautiful.
Thank you. Well, you know, as I told you, Spencer, when we talked earlier, that when we started Rolling Stone, it was basically a newspaper. It was printed on newsprint. We could only print black and then one color. So I was really required to shoot in black and white. I love black and white anyhow. But while I was at Rolling Stone, never during the time I was at Rolling Stone could I shoot color for that magazine, which was interesting.
And why was that?
I'm sorry?
They just didn't want, because it was a newspaper and they couldn't really replicate a color photography?
Cost factor. It's probably the cost factor, Holly, you know, the black and white versus printing in color for the plates and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to know from you, because I know you probably have many, and I ask this of most of the people that I have on here, what, like, was one of the really moments that really sticks in your mind? Do you have one or two or whatever that really, really stuck with you, that really was like it was almost like a moment that you really held on to?
What do you mean, photographically?
In shooting with your photos. Yeah, oh, of course, dear.
Well, you know, I was in Berlin when the Berlin Wall went up. And so I took a bunch of pictures of them building the wall, and I realized at that moment that this was a very important moment in history. It was equally as important as when we started Rolling Stone, believe it or not. So I definitely remember being there. I also remember when my first assignment for Rolling Stone, I'll never forget that. My first live concert that I shot for Rolling Stone, I'll never forget that. You know.
What was your first assignment for Rolling Stone?
Well, the first assignment for Rolling Stone was to cover a press conference of the Grateful Dead in their house in San Francisco in the Haight-Ashbury because they had been busted for having pot in the house. And they gave this... Yeah, well,
oh, that is too funny.
Yeah. So.
But tell about the whipped cream. Remember we were talking about that, Baron?
So what happened at the press conference, the entire San Francisco media was there at the press conference, and the Dead was sitting on one side of the table with all the microphones and stuff, and then the media was on the other side asking questions with cameras and stuff. But in front of the Dead had put this big, huge bowl of whipped cream in front of the media, and they said, the first one of you guys that asks a stupid question, we're going to throw whipped cream in your face.
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah.
I have another call on 212. I wonder who that is. Are you expecting anyone? Let's see who it is. 212, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hello.
Hi. Who am I speaking
Hello.
With?
Hello. This is June Clark. I'm calling from
New
York.
Oh, June.
Hi,
June. It's Holly. How are you, darling?
Hello.
Hi,
Spencer.
Hi, June.
Hi, I'm very pleased to say hello to Mr. Warman. I love your photography, and I really appreciate all the work you've done over the years. It's really beautiful. But I have some questions for Baron. I want to know, I understand how he got involved in the music photography end of things, but want to know, apart, I then also know that he did photojournalism, but you really cling to the music photography, and therefore you must find more satisfaction from that genre of photography than any others. Did you try for any length of time, any other aspect of photography that you thought of venturing into, or are you thinking of doing that in the future? And
well, that's a very interesting question, because the fact of the matter is my tenure with music photography was very, very short if compared to my entire photographic career. After I left Rolling Stone and after I left the shooting music, I did a lot of other things, many other things, but most people either don't remember or don't even know about it. So I have done more than the music, and yet it's the music photography that it resonates with people most. And I will say this about the music photography. I love the musicians. They make music. Music makes me happy. I cannot imagine a world without music. And therefore, I enjoyed honoring them because they were doing something, making a contribution that was so important to all of us, you know.
That's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
I love to hear that, and I can certainly appreciate it, because I think anybody that has been touched by music in their life cannot live without it. It's a medium that we want to have beyond so many others. So I can appreciate that. That's wonderful.
After I left Rolling Stone, I started another magazine, a fashion magazine, which was called Rags, which was really the Rolling Stone of fashion. And it was printed by, it was very similar. We were treating fashion the same way Rolling Stone treated music. After that, I started a book publishing company. After that, I got an airplane and started doing aerial landscapes around the world.
Oh, I love that one.
Wow.
That sounds cool.
Oh, I wish I was there for that.
Yes. Oh, so you have really dipped your finger into all these little paint pots, and you have chosen what's so special to you. And I love that, because you've explored it all. And perhaps... in a way, you can bring some of your other work for us to appreciate and bring it to the forefront. I can't imagine that the world would exclude you. Of course, it might not appeal to the same public that appeals to your work right now, But
there's so many other avenues.
What you can do and what you can give to us, because the work of photography itself is just sharing an inner part of you, how you see things in such a unique way, but also you're able, through timing with the camera, you're able to capture that one moment that becomes so special, and only you can do that in your own way, and what makes your photography unique.
I think
because we can all look at the same
agent.
Thing, you know.
Don't you want to be
That's
my publicity
great.
Agent?
Hey, you know what I wanted to ask you, Baron, why don't you tell everybody about your book that's coming out. Jenny has a book coming out called Every Picture Has It Tells a Story. When is that coming out, and what can we expect from that?
Well, it's coming out in the spring. And
uh-huh.
It really is, it's a very interesting music photo book in that there's a lot of text. And the text
mm-hmm.
is this. Every time I take a picture, there is a story about this behind the picture having to do with the situation, my relationship with the musician, where I was. And people are always asking me about that. They're saying, oh, what was it like to meet Janis Joplin? What was it like to be on stage with the Rolling Stones like that?
Sure.
So I decided that I would combine the pictures with the answers to those stories. And
mm-hmm.
that's what the book's going to do.
That's what people want to read, that stuff. You know, you have this blog on photosynthesis with Baron Wallman, and there's a lot of stories on that with your photographs.
Yes, and the stories are I think the stories are pretty interesting.
They are.
And, Baron, you know, I wanted to ask you really quick because I forgot to ask you, what is your website that people can go to and actually see some of that? Because I went to it. It was a really great, fun website.
Yeah, me too.
It's called BaronWallman.com. BaronWallman.com.
And you've absolutely captured some of the moments that we, you know, the normal person wouldn't have been there for, but actually being able to see the image and you put yourself into that, you could actually start to feel some of it if you're open to that, start to feel what's really going on there. And what's really great is the way that you articulate it and talk about what was happening at the moment that picture was taken. So really it's a lot of you see the picture and then there's the story, like every picture tells a story. That's so brilliant. And
Holly, you put your finger on something really important. One of the things I tried to do with my photos, my music photos, was especially the concert stuff, was to give people who weren't there a sense of what it was like to have been there. You know, because not everybody could go to the Fillmore every weekend, but but I was trying to show this is what was going on. You know, this is how it was. This is how it felt. And you know, was I successful? A lot of the time I was, I think, and that was what I was trying to do.
There's a photograph of, I think, Holly, you might agree on this, Johnny Cash. Remember that one with the...
Yeah, the Johnny Cash, black and white, with him sitting there.
Yeah, that's a strong
photo. With a cigarette in his hand. I think that's, it just, like, captures, you said it was a very serious side. For him. He looks very serious in this picture. Did you tell me about that picture, that day you took that picture?
Yeah, well, you know, if you know anything about Cash, he was in many respects, he was a troubled man. He was not a happy guy.
Absolutely.
And so I saw that backstage. I was sitting backstage with him before the concert, and I took that picture, and I thought, I hope this guy is going to be able to go out there and, you know, give the audience their money's worth, because he doesn't look like he even wants to step out.
He doesn't look like a very happy camper there.
Yeah.
He's in a very deep thought process, yeah.
Exactly. And then but he went out on the stage, and the show was fabulous, and nobody knew how he felt beforehand. You know, it's often the case, I think, with performers. And I'll tell you another interesting story about that, is that if you look at that picture carefully, reflected in a mirror behind him is his wife.
I see a woman. Yep.
You see June Carter?
That's
Cash?
Her in the black dress.
Yep.
With the hair. Yeah, I see that.
Well,
yep.
I hadn't seen that. I had a show in New York at the Morrison Hotel Gallery about 4 years ago, and some woman came up and said, "Oh, I love that picture of Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash." I said, "Well, I know Johnny. Where's June?" And she pointed it out to me. And, you know, I took that picture in 1967.
You didn't see it before? Oh, that's crazy.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Well, this is an awesome picture. And, you know, you were talking about the Morrison. There's also another gallery that I spoke to Samantha about. And she has her SamanthaLewin.com. Her photography, she has a lot of photography of yours and other people. And it's in a very unique setting instead of just a gallery. It's in a house among antiques, and I implore anyone to go there. And actually, you get to go see some of this artwork, and you get to see it in a house atmosphere rather than in just a gallery, which isn't a bad thing. But you get to see what it would look like in your house. And Samantha's lovely. I mean, I spoke with her at length, and she just, like, is so, she loves what she does. You can tell she loves what she does, and she picks the best that she feels to capture and represent in her own house/gallery type setting. So if Samantha Lewin, LUEN.com. And make sure you stop by there. I love the Morrison, too, but this is just such a different thing.
It's L-E-W-I-N, Samantha Lewin, Samantha
Lewin. Let me see here. Yeah.
Yeah, it is for sure. But here's the thing. Samantha is a really interesting woman who's been involved with images and photographers for her whole life, and she seems to love not only pictures but the photographers, and my relationship with her is so lovely, you know. She's such a nice
person. She loves you, yeah, absolutely.
She's very personal.
And, you know, I can imagine that going into her home, first of all, her home must be fantastic, but going into her home and seeing all the photos on the wall as if you were going into your own home and seeing the photos on your wall, that must be a really fascinating way to look at photography.
It is.
Yeah.
And that was what she was trying to capture. That's what she was trying to tell me. She was trying to tell me, you know, I love the Morrison Gallery. I love all the galleries in New York. But here somebody has a chance to really see if they're going to really put some money in a photo. They get to see what it's going to really look like among. She said she has some beautiful antiques and things in her house/gallery. So that's kind of cool. But getting back to you. What do you have planned in the future besides the book coming out?
Well, the book's a pretty big deal because, you know, once the book is out, I'm going to go on a world tour and, you know, have book release parties in all the big cities and many of the international cities. So,
and you have a showing up here where I'm at right now.
Well, yeah, I've got a temporarily permanent show at the Markham Vineyards Gallery in St. Helena. They have like 100 of my photos on the wall. It looks fantastic.
That's
so
where I'm going.
In the Bay Area, especially in the Bay Area, if you're going into the wine country, you can see that.
That's where Holly is.
That's where I'm going to go this weekend.
That's where Holly is.
Yeah, I'm in Sonoma.
Yay.
Yep. So I'm going to go to St. Helena, and I'm actually going to go see that. And I'm actually really excited because it'll be so neat to be able to see it because, you know, Spencer has been trying to get me to get out there to New York, and I've just had so many other things going on. I've had a hard time getting out there right now. But I see that you also photographed Jimi Hendrix and Frank Zappa and Donovan and B.B. King. I mean, tell me about those days.
Well, you know, I always tell people that it was impossible to take a bad picture of Jimi Hendrix. First of all, he had such style, how he dressed and everything like that. You know, he really, I mean, he knew how to put clothes together, baby, for sure.
Yeah.
And so when you're with him,
a pimp
know,
of all pimps.
Yeah, well, and,
that's a good one.
I swear, he just dressed so righteous. It was great.
Yeah. So, you know, you'd sit around with him, and he was very quiet and very nice guy when he wasn't on stage. When he got on stage, he became a firecracker, you know. I mean, not only did he, what he wore on stage was it colorful, but how he moved his body and how he worked the guitar and his expressions. And, you know, for me, those were the most exciting moments to photograph, I got to say. Jimi Hendrix always... I look at the pictures I took of Jimi Hendrix, and the percentage of good ones over the mediocre ones is just so different. They were...
Oh, fabulous, yeah. Do you have you met his brother Leon at all?
Uh-uh.
Leon Hendrix? His brother Leon and Jimmy's daughter actually just had a party for him just recently. Yeah, and they had a lot of his photography. I understand there was quite a few pieces that you had there too. And I also see you did George Harrison. Photographed George Harrison and Grace Slick. Gracie, I know on a personal level here. She's in San Francisco. She's really cool. What about the George Harrison pictures? What did you do on that?
Well, I was in London in 1968 to do a bunch of photography of the Stones and the Who, and one of the assignments I had, and it was for Rolling Stone, was we were interviewing George Harrison, so I went up to the Apple Corps offices, which were really cool. They were putting in their studio. They were just finishing off the offices there, and we were waiting around to start the interview, and he was reading. I don't know if you can see in that picture, but he was reading Dylan's book, Don't Look Back, and just totally relaxed, and I thought, yeah, this is a great shot. You know, there's George relaxed. He, of all the, you know, he was a righteous Beatle. He really was.
Mm-hmm. Did you happen to get, I did not read everything, but did you happen to get to shoot John at all?
Mm-mm. Did not. Never did, unfortunately.
Okay. I see the George Harrison, and I see a lot of that, and I know that you also did Janis Joplin, some pictures of
Janis
Joplin.
You know, she lived right around the corner from me in the hay before she moved to Larkspur.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you'd see her on the street. And I'd see her in the clubs, and, you know, she's more of a friend, well, you know, an acquaintance, a good acquaintance, than a star. I mean, I knew all these people, Holly, before they became really big and became...
Before they became anything, yeah. Tell me about Woodstock.
Yeah, she was. Sure she was.
I want to know about Woodstock.
Oh, my God.
A funny story behind this one.
I saw you at Woodstock.
I know. I was at Woodstock. Yeah, I was rolling around.
I saw you there in the mud, rolling around in the mud.
Yeah, I was. I was. In my other life, I was at Woodstock. But tell me about Woodstock. We lost June. June hung up. Thank you, June, for calling in.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I just told June thank you for calling in.
Anyhow, Woodstock was amazing because I had never seen such a huge gathering of people in my life. I don't think anybody had. I think that was the first really mega concert ever. 300,000 people. I mean, think about it. And the other thing was about Woodstock, which was really interesting, is that more people came up there than had tickets. And so, you know, they wanted to get into the show, and so they started pushing down the cyclone fence, all the people that were running the show, what running Woodstock, decided to make it a free concert. I think at that moment, that's when it really earned the mythical reputation that it has of being this wonderful peace, love, and freedom, peace, love, and music experience that everybody had, you know. So I saw all of that going on. It was a disaster waiting to happen. And the fact that nothing bad happened is a miracle. Because
that was that. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, 3 or 4 months later, Altamont happened, and Altamont was the exact opposite experience of Woodstock. You know, a free concert where there was a murder and all kinds of chaos and mayhem and chaos there.
Well, you were in a good place at a good time. And I also see you shot Mick Jagger. And I'm reading here. It says you like the outfit. You said is Jagger a Libra because he had a. Tell me about that. That's funny.
Well, he has it. I mean, if you know that concert was in 1969.
Yeah.
And they were touring, and he wore that T-shirt with the Libra symbol on it. Although some people say it was a Libra symbol. They have other interpretations of it, but he is a Libra. It's really funny because in 1977, he came back and he played the Oakland Coliseum for a day on the green, and it was his birth. He played on his birthday, and Bill Graham had made this big, huge panorama, as he did for all the day on the greens, of the lips, you know, big, huge lips. And he came out. He didn't even know that Bill had, you know, had decided to do that for his birthday. It was really fabulous. So that was a shot in color, too, Spencer. I mean, that one, after I left Rolling Stone, I started shooting a lot more in color. And DNA, you know, the musicians are pretty colorful themselves, too, what they wear on stage and all. So I got these great shots of Jimmy Page in that dragon suit. You probably know that's a very famous outfit.
Yeah, pretty famous shot.
Yeah, it's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now, too, you know, that outfit. So anyhow, yeah, what was the story
with Phil Spector? Remember that story, Holly, with the barbed wire fence, or what was that whole
thing? Tell me about that.
A lot of people don't know who Phil Spector is or was. I mean, he's not was, but I think he's in jail now. But, you know, he was a very, very, very important music producer, wrote music and all that stuff. And we were doing a story about him, a feature about him in Rolling Stone. So Jan and I flew down to L.A. from San Francisco, and we wanted to go up to his house and interview him, but he said, no, you can't come up to the house on your own. He said, you got to wait in front of my offices down on Sunset Boulevard and get your rental car, park your rental car, turn off the lights, and just sit there. And pretty soon a black limo comes up. Yeah, a black limo comes up behind, and his driver.
Was he paranoid or what?
Oh, yeah. Well, and they drove us up to his house up in the hills of Beverly Hills, and it was surrounded by a cyclone fence. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how he felt, but he must have been upset about something. So then we go in the house, and the driver takes off his jacket and shows us that he's carrying a shoulder holster so that we better not mess with Mr. Spector, right?
Oh, wow.
And a few minutes later, Phil comes downstairs and sucking on a candy cane. It's like, oh, this is the guy we're afraid of, huh? He's the guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
That is funny. That is funny. But, you know, I think that's hilarious. You know, here you have this big bad guy, you know, with all the big bad wolves protecting him, and then he comes down with the candy cane. But you spent a lot of time up here in Northern California. You said you lived in Mill Valley for a while, and you were in San Francisco, obviously.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, I moved to San Francisco. When I first came to California, I lived in L.A. for a couple of years. Then I moved up to San Francisco, moved directly into the Hay. And that's when we were doing Rolling Stone. And after some stuff happened, so we moved to Mill Valley and stayed there till 89, then I moved on up to Santa Rosa. So I've been, you know, Sebastopol and Santa Rosa, I think. So,
Do you miss it? Do you miss California?
Well, I miss my friends. You know, I started to feel Californicated after a while with all the traffic and the development, rape of the land, I thought, you know, and overproduction of too many vineyards, and I don't know. It just kind of started to depress me. So I said, I got to get out of here. But I was there 35 years, so, you know, it isn't so.
Yeah, you were here a long time.
Yeah,
well, No, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the great things that happened while I was in the Bay Area is that I used to shoot for the NFL, and I was a team photographer for the Oakland Raiders, shot a lot for the 49ers. And then when the Super Bowl was played in San Francisco at Stanford, the NFL hired me to do the theme picture where they actually sent the Lombardi Trophy, right? The one that they give to the winning team. They sent it to me. I had it in my house. And so the theme was I shot it in conjunction with the Golden Gate Bridge. So every evening I'd carry that thing out to the Golden Gate Bridge and find a different position where I could juxtapose the trophy with the bridge, you know. And the people would say, oh, hey, look what you got, man. Whoa, how'd you get that? It was really a trip. I'll never forget that.
See, there we go into away from rock and roll photography, more into, you know, photography of the moment and capturing things. I mean, that's great.
You know, you and I were talking about Jerry Seltzer. You know, Jerry Seltzer's father was roller derby. And so when I was at Rolling Stone, they were skating roller derby for TV at the Golden Gate Pavilion. I think it's, oh, what's it called? Anyhow, it's right there in the Golden Gate Park.
It's at the Pavilion, yeah.
The Pavilion, and they were skating there for TV, and I went over and I said, well, what's going on? And that's how I met Jerry, and I started photographing roller derby. We even did a story in Rolling Stone about roller derby, you know.
Wow.
I was just curious about everything that was going on, you know.
Is there anyone out there right now that may be listening, or because we do have a large listening audience, that you would like to possibly photograph? Is there anyone that you want to photograph that you're having a challenge with getting to, or what?
No, I can pretty here's the thing. I can pretty much get to whomever I want.
That's great.
There are many musicians I would have liked to have photographed. I would have liked to have photographed Dylan Moore, for example. I would have liked to have photographed Tom Petty. I would have liked to have photographed John Mellencamp for various reasons. And, you know, I never
there we go, New York siren.
Oh, God. Welcome to New York City.
Yeah.
Hello, New York.
I know.
Yeah, so.
Can I ask you a question? What influences, did you have any influences in photography yourself, or photographers that you looked up to, or other, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, as a photojournalist, we always, all of us looked up to Cartier-Bresson, who was able to, you know, capture a moment in time that spoke to you beyond the picture. And, you know, that's what we were all trying to do. My friend Jim Marshall, who died recently, an outstanding music photographer, you know, and I was inspired by him a lot, some of the things that he did.
Jim was also great.
I loved Avedon and Irving Penn, the way they worked in the studio. In fact, when I shot The Grateful Dead, I brought him into the studio and decided I was going to do like an Avedon / Penn series of them. And that's when I got that great shot of Jerry Garcia holding up his hand, showing that, you know, that he, that finger had been chopped off that he never showed anybody. So directly like that. He had this big smile on his face and he held his hand up and there was half a finger missing. And nobody really knew that that was the case for so long, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, so it was just one wonderful experience after another. I'm serious. Yeah. And
this book that you're coming out with, Every Picture Tells a Story, is there are you thinking of is there a follow up to that? Are you already thinking about that or what?
No, this is it, baby. I'm done. Yep. After this, I'm done with rock and roll.
Who's the
listening to rock and roll and not done loving rock and roll? I just don't, you know, I can't. I tell people I'm in the recycling business because that's what I'm doing. I'm recycling.
Oh, you're too funny.
Yeah.
Baron, you're funny.
Yeah,
who's
the publisher?
Baron, who's the publisher of that book that's coming out?
It's Omnibus Press. Omnibus Music Sales. They do a lot of music publishing in the UK, and they have a U.S. distribution arm.
Yeah.
They did Jim Marshall's book. They've done Barry Levine's. I mean, Barry. What's his name? Oh, come on, the guy that. They did Dylan. Barry Feinstein's book. They've done a book on. They've done a lot of Led Zeppelin book. You know, by Neil Preston. So they do a lot of good color photo books and stuff. But this is different because there's going to be more text in this book than anybody's ever seen in a rock and roll photo book. Really.
That's a good thing because, like it says, every picture tells a story. I mean, this is basically going to be a book where you're going to have a picture and then you're going to tell the story behind it. So people can actually be there in that moment, which I think is really important because, you know, there are a lot of pictures I see, like there's one picture, and it sticks in my mind so much. There's this one famous picture of Muhammad Ali, and I don't know the whole story behind that picture. So it's like for me, I see it, and it's such a powerful picture, but yet I still don't know what was going on during that. And I think it's really important that, you know, to paint pictures, like painting, you know, like pictures in your mind so that you're able to be able to visualize what you're really looking at. And
I think historically it's important to tell these stories because after I'm gone to that big dark room in the sky, the pictures will
Oh, God.
So, you know what I mean? The pictures will remain, but the stories will be gone. And I want to, I think every photographer should try to do this, you know.
So this way, the stories are there, yeah. I do, too. I absolutely do too.
Yeah, because you know, a lot of them are passing away, and with them go the memories. You know, living history.
It go the memories with the stories. Yeah, and you know what's really great is, you know, the album covers that, like Spencer's 545 book. I don't know if you've had a chance to see that.
I got it right away. Hey, I went on Amazon, got it immediately.
Excellent.
Hey, thank you,
excellent book.
You going to sign it for me, Spencer?
Yes, I will.
You better. And you better send me one of your books, Baron, signed to me.
That's right. Janice and Holly
book.
Okay,
when it comes out.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was in Woodstock rolling around in the mud. But, you know, Spencer has a client also that he represents, and I don't know if you've seen any of her work, but it's really cool. What she does is she takes an album cover and she enhances it by painting, and it actually enhances it to the point where you actually start to see things in the album. Zani Rudolph, have you had a chance to see any of that? I'll send you the link later.
Okay.
But
no,
I think you'd like it.
Yeah.
Because you're so much, you're very visual, so you would really like this. It's really kind of cool how she enhances it. She paints over these album covers, and it's really cool.
You know, actually,
when
you think about it, one of the things that I'm really sad about is that with the disappearance of vinyl, we also lost that great art that went along with the album covers.
We did.
For
a
period of time, there was fantastic art for album covers, you know. Mm-hmm. All kinds of photographers, painters, graphic artists, everybody was doing wonderful things on 12-inch by 12-inch piece of canvas, basically,
right.
You know.
Right.
And then it went away, and you can't do that with a CD, you know.
Don't you think vinyl's coming back, though?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff being pressed in vinyl, and you'll see a lot of vinyl, but it, you know, it's not, most people.
It's
right
lost.
Now,
you feel like it's lost its magic with the covers and stuff.
Well, no, there's just no opportunity anymore. I mean, the kids now, they don't listen to an album; they download a song. They don't even care.
Yeah, they do.
If you made an album, they wouldn't hear all of the songs on the album. They'd pick out the one song they liked or two songs, download, and they'd miss the whole point of the way the musician has put together 12, 15 songs over a period of time to give a certain effect to the listener, you know.
But you know, it's interesting. When Judith and I were doing the book, I think Holly knows, a lot of people are now, like the kids, which I'm really shocked by, going to the record stores, they want to hear vinyl. They are really hip. Like, you'd think it would be, well, they go tech, which is true. A lot of kids go tech. But a lot of musicians and kids are going into vinyl. And that's why, like, 45 pressing plants are going on now, and vinyl pressing plants. Not in a bigger quantity like it used to be, but they're being sold out. I talked to the distributor, and he said, you know, he said, Baron, he says, you got to have vinyl. You got to have vinyl. First thing he said,
yes,
you got to have vinyl.
That's true. But what
you know,
that, it's a whole different
whole different world.
Yeah.
Well, it's a whole different retail world now because back then, that's all there was, and back then, every album, every record.
Do you remember 8-tracks, Baron?
Oh wow!
Yeah, sure, 8-tracks.
So cool.
My God, those big, thick things. 8-tracks before cassettes. There were 8-tracks, and then there were cassettes, and then we finally went to CDs, and now we're on Blu-ray discs, right? I mean, it's like pretty soon. I wouldn't be surprised if we're able to actually play music, and I've heard from some developers where they're actually going to be able to have a concert that you actually could actually project in a 3D in your living room. You'll actually see it. You'll sit, and you'll actually see the concert going on like you're really sitting there at the concert. And you'll be able to interact with the actual things, and you have to have these special glasses and stuff like that. But I've heard some rumors that that's going to happen. So we have so much technology. The technology is just going like crazy right now. I mean, you know, and
is that
I think
thing
that
or a bad thing? What do you think?
It's a good thing, but in a way, for me, I feel like we're losing a little bit of the innocence of what really is the classic, like with photography, like with you. I don't want ever photography to ever be compromised in any way, and the artistic talents that went behind all of it, because you can always enhance something computerly generated or whatever, but I think when really you get to the raw thing, the real thing, that's what's really where it's at, because that's where all the emotion is and that's where it all comes from, you know?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you're right. I tell you this, though. I think that the digital revolution has just changed the equation dramatically. Everybody now can buy a digital camera and become a photographer, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's good news and bad news. I mean, the professionals now are competing with talented amateurs, and it's really difficult for professional photographers to, especially the ones who do the kind of pictures that I did and do. And, you know,
yeah.
You can go into a store, spend $5,000 to get a fabulous digital camera, go to a concert, sit up close, second row, and start shooting some of the same stuff. You know, not the same stuff that we can, but we don't have access anymore. This is the thing. This is the main thing. One of the reasons I left rock and roll photography is that access was beginning to be denied. If you don't have access to the stage, to the musicians, to the people themselves, you don't get a chance to do the intimate, wonderful photos that we were able to do, because when we started, there were no big managers, no big PR people, no security guards. We had access. We were part of the family of music, you know, and as soon as music got to be, the business of music got bigger than the music itself, and they started drawing lines around us and saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, well, we were not taking anything from the musicians. We were actually contributing to not only how people saw them, but to their careers in many respects, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were kind of isolated from the very experience that we needed in order to make the wonderful pictures that you like now, you know.
Right.
So access, without access,
I agree.
Yeah. Ask anybody. Ask any photographer. You know what happens? There's a pit in front of the stage. They say, okay, everybody into the pit. You got two songs, and then you got to go, and we own all the pictures. Well, what kind of incentive is that for somebody to be creative?
Yeah, that's just not right.
Yeah, so anyhow, don't start.
You know what really
that.
Gets me is what you said to me. What I feel is this, is your photography was done without enhancement, without the digital cameras and with all that. This was done with pure talent and really your mind and your eye and your talent of knowing when to take the picture at the right moment. So you're welcome. I totally believe that. So now for anyone in the present day, as we say, that picks up a digital camera can go out and they can take maybe something similar to that, and they can go back and they can Photoshop it, enhance it, and make it look. It doesn't look natural.
Right.
And what's really what I mean, and it may look different. That's not the matter that it looks better. It just looks different. But the thing that I really want to say is, I feel that the photography that you've done and a few of the other photographers that are doing now, that are classic photography, classic rock and roll photography. Like, I mean, come on, you were the first photographer at Rolling Stone magazine. I mean, Rolling Stone was born there, right then and there with you. I mean, you know that this photography is here to stay, and this is the real deal. We have like about 1 minute, and I'm going to play your favorite song, one of your favorite songs, and it's by Tom Petty. And it's called Won't Back Down. And you chose that song based on the fact that you just really feel that you just, you know, are going to stick with what you're doing and you're not going to compromise yourself.
Hey, can I say something, Holly? Can I say something?
Oh, absolutely.
I want to say, first of all, hello to Judith, who's not on here, my co-author of the 45 book. And also, I want to tell everybody what a wonderful thing it is for me to be on this show as a co-host with Holly Steffi. I want to tell everybody out there that she's the hostess with the mostest.
Oh, well, yeah, that was very sweet of you. Thank you.
True.
And, yes, I miss Judith. Judith has been working on a project, and she's been tied up. And we miss Judith. Judith, come back really soon. And we hope that you're in a really good place right now getting your work done. But I do want to end this now with your song. And, Baron, I would like for you to say to the public whatever you would like to leave your last thought with everybody.
My last thought. Boy, you're putting pressure on me now.
You know, no. Just what would you tell somebody that wants to... Okay.
All I want to say, sweetheart, all I want to say is peace, love, and music.
Oh.
Ah.
After that, there's nothing more.
Right.
There isn't. Well, I want to say peace, love, and happiness. How's that?
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Thanks
so much to both of you for having me on the show.
Baron, I want to have you on again really soon. You know, let's do a release party for your book. Okay?
Great idea.
All right. Make sure you keep in touch with me. I will definitely call you. This show, again, will be available as a podcast on Red Velvet Media Blog Talk Radio, and we are on Facebook, and Baron Woolman is on Facebook, and so is Spencer Drate. Again, we want to say thank you for joining us. And June, thank you for calling in from New York. And with that, I'm going to end it with your song.
Bye-bye.
Peace, love,
bye,
and happiness, bye, everyone.